And then on the flip side, especially if you're looking at some of the companies that I mentioned before, like the Googles, Facebooks, Microsofts, that caliber of company, referrals are pretty much table stakes. And so,
hey, Frem, really excited for this Portfolio Career podcast episode with Austin Belsack. This is a tactful and instructional conversation. Through my podcast, I aim to provide a mix of insights of people with portfolio careers, launching new projects, and also ones that are extremely tactful for people that are looking to make a transition or in the process of transitioning. So Austin is the Director of Partner Development at Microsoft and the founder and CEO of Cultivated Culture, where Austin teaches people how to use unconventional strategies to land jobs in today's job market without connections, traditional experience, or applying online. As you can see, Austin has quite the portfolio career and really provides a ton of actionable insights here. He is constantly posting incredible content on LinkedIn. Hope you can follow, learn, and connect with Austin there. One post has 1,700 shares on LinkedIn. 1,700 shares. There is a link to that in the show notes. Hope you can check that out. On this episode, we talk in detail about that post, referrals, value validation projects, and the importance of side hustles. Really excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. As always, this episode with notes is on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. So here we go with Austin.
Cool. Welcome to Portfolio Career Podcast. Your host, David Nabinski, is here with Austin Belsack. How's it going, Austin?
Hey, David. It's going well, man. How about yourself?
I'm good. So Austin, if we were to go to an event tonight, how do you typically introduce yourself?
So typically, I'm not one to share too much about what I do, which may not be the point of the question. So I usually tell people that I work in digital advertising sales, which kind of covers the base of what I do in my full-time job. I usually don't talk about my side business too much, but if you push me on it, I would tell you I run a website called cultivatedculture.com, which basically aims to teach people how to leverage unconventional strategies to help them land a job they love that pays them what they deserve, regardless of what their background looks like and without applying online, because the online applications these days are pretty crazy in the career space. It can feel kind of like you're spraying and praying and shooting in the dark with no real control over the process. So I basically teach people a different strategy. It's focused around building relationships and adding value that allows them to take back some of that control. And I've been doing it for about 3 years now. We've had about 40 to 50,000 people come through the community total. And they've gone on to land jobs at pretty much every place you can think of: Google, Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Microsoft, Goldman Sachs, ESPN, Deloitte, across industries, across levels of experience. So it's been really, really gratifying, and it's been a lot of fun.
Awesome. Well, clearly there's a lot to talk about. And maybe we could start with a question that maybe I could have asked with, what is the biggest challenge your company is facing right now?
Sure.
I'm kidding. I love that that question. I believe it's one that you typically recommend people to ask their friends or peers as they're starting to look for jobs and projects and stuff. And so maybe you could talk a little bit about that question. And
definitely. So yeah, this is one of my favorite questions. And if you're just getting to know people, maybe lead with something a little softer. And one of my favorites when you're just getting, you know, if you're going to a networking event or if you're just grabbing some drinks, a lot of people say, what do you do? And I really don't like that question, kind of as we just covered. So I really like to ask people, you know, tell me about yourself, or if you, you know, if we could spend 4 hours talking about something, what would it be? And that typically gets people going on something that they like, because not everybody loves talking about their job. Some people do. And that opens the gate for it. But as you start building that relationship and that rapport, you're having that conversation, or maybe you've met up a few times, then it's awesome to dig into people's challenges for so many reasons. First off, when you are looking for a new job or when you're looking to make a move in your career, the best thing that you can do, the first step should always be to get clear on where you want to go next. And some people know exactly where they want to go. Some people, that's a little bit harder to figure out. A lot of people are worried about making a wrong move, right? They're worried about wasting time. They're worried about ending up in the same situation they are now, wanting to leave and having to go through this process again. So getting super clear on what you want to do next and feeling confident about that is huge. And talking about people's challenges and talking about people's day-to-days and the projects that they're working on is a great way to do that. So getting out there and finding people who work in the role that you want to target or the industry you want to target, and just sending them an email and saying, hey, I'm really impressed by your experience, what you've been doing. You mind if we hop on the phone? And then on the phone, asking them some of those questions. You know, what's the biggest challenge you're facing right now? What are your goals for the next 6 to 12 months? What projects are you working on to get there? And the answers that you get from those questions are really going to give you a pretty clear picture of how that role operates and what to expect and what the day-to-day looks like. It'll give you answers to all these questions that you probably had or may not have known about going into it. And that's really going to help you inform where you want to go next. And then once you do have an idea of where you want to go next, the best thing that you can do is build relationships with people who are in a position to impact the hiring process for that role. So what I mean by that is, a lot of people think that they should be reaching out to recruiters, or that they should be just finding anybody at the company, be it a friend or a connection, a second degree connection or whatever. And with recruiters, it's a bit tough because they can get you in the door, but that's really where their influence ends. So they can't advocate for you throughout the interview process. They're not going to be in the room where the hiring decision is made. And also, they're usually the face of a job posting. So they're getting hounded by people just like you who are saying, read my resume, you know, I want to work for you, et cetera. And then on the flip side, especially if you're looking at some of the companies that I mentioned before, like the Googles, Facebooks, Microsofts, that caliber of company, referrals are pretty much table stakes. And so, and also a lot of the teams there, they operate in silos. So if somebody is in a completely different side of the business and they refer you in, that referral is still good, but it doesn't always guarantee you an interview. It doesn't always guarantee you a spot or a phone screen. Whereas if you can target somebody who would be your potential manager or your potential colleague who might be sitting next to you, that person can refer you in, but not only can they do that, they can coach you throughout the interview process. They can really advocate for you, and they can be in the room where the hiring decision is made. And so those are great people to build relationships with. And then learning about the challenges that they have, asking them, hey, what's your biggest challenge? Where are you going over the next 6 to 12 months? All these same questions, that will give you a really strong sense of what the team is dealing with. And whenever a company is hiring for a role, they're essentially looking for a candidate who's going to bring the largest ROI for that role. And they want to hire somebody who's going to be able to come in and make an immediate impact. And the best way for you to be that person is to do your research and understand the same things, those challenges, those projects, and then tie your experience into why that matters. So instead of talking about, hey, here's what I did 2 years ago and leaving it at that, you can say, hey, here's what I did 2 years ago. And I also know that you guys are struggling with X, or you're trying to achieve Y. And here's why that experience plugs right into that. You know, I have these ideas. I went through this before. Here's what was successful. Here's what wasn't. Here's exactly what I would do if I come on board. So this idea of asking, what's your biggest challenge? What projects are you working on? What are your goals? Where do you want to go? That really informs, one, your decision for your next career move, but then also when you get dialed into what you want, it allows you to get a deep understanding of exactly why that team is hiring, so you can speak to that specifically, and that's really going to set you apart from other candidates.
Wow. there was almost as much in there as there was in your blog post about what you learned after, you know, 50 plus interviews.
I try to pack it in when I can.
I appreciate that. And so, yeah, I'm definitely going to put a link to that blog post that kind of went viral for anyone who's not seen it. Where to follow up after that? Referrals are table stakes.
I mean, we can break it down from the beginning. I think one of the best places, and David, you can tell me if this is the direction you want to go. So this whole thing stemmed out of my personal experience. And I was a college grad. I had a biology degree. I didn't have very good grades. And I just jumped right into the first job that fell in my lap. I was having a lot of fun in college. I came from a boarding school, so college was a bit more of an independent experience and a bit more of a social experience, shall we say. So grades and classes were not my priority. And then I graduated and I just took the first job that ended up in my lap, and I ended up hating it. So I was making next to nothing. I was making less than half than most of my friends who graduated similar degrees. And I was in a place that I didn't really love. I was in an industry that I wasn't a fan of, and my boss was just not a great person. So I decided I needed to make a career move. And then I went to the people who we always go to for advice throughout our lives, right? Which is our parents, our friends, guidance counselors, teachers, professors. you know, throughout our lives, if we have a relationship problem, if we have a big life decision, if we, you know, need to know how do we go get this summer job or whatever, those are the people that you usually go to. And they all gave me the same advice, which should have been the first red flag. And that advice was, hey, go tweak your resume, go tweak your cover letter, and then get out there and apply online because, quote unquote, it's a numbers game. And that's what everybody said. And so I did that. I tweaked my resume, I tweaked my cover letter. I started applying for jobs. I ended up applying for about 100 jobs within the first month after I decided I needed to change careers. And I didn't get a single interview. And I figured this can't be right. This can't be the way that it's done, because nothing business related, nothing that I've seen has a success rate that's this poor. So I went back to them and I said, what's going on here, guys? Is there something else I can do? What's the deal? And they all said the same thing. They're like, well, you just didn't apply to enough. So rinse and repeat. And the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. So I knew I wasn't crazy, but I just didn't know what else I could do. And I knew this wasn't the right way. So I went and I tried to reframe things. And so I wrote out criteria for my dream job, which was to be working at a major tech company, eventually like a Google or a Microsoft, to be living in a major city. I was in Charlotte, North Carolina at the time. I wanted to get to like a New York, San Fran, LA, et cetera. I wanted to be making six figures annually, and I wanted to be doing that all before I was 26. So I wrote all those out, and then I went to LinkedIn and I tried to find as many of those people as I could. And I started talking to them and I started doing a lot of research. And basically what I found was that through my research, the data out there shows that on average, these roles, any open role at an average company gets about 300 to 350 applicants. And of that, they bring in about five people. So everything else gets screened out by what's called an applicant tracking system, which is essentially a robot that scans your resume and decides whether or not you're a great fit, which is like the most dystopian thing I can think of at the moment. But that's a crazy ratio. 5 out of 350, and you're talking sub 1%, sub 2% there. And that's just for the average job. So that's, you know, Joe Schmo's business, that's middle of the road, whatever. That's not your Microsoft, that's not your Google. You know, the average open role gets 350 applicants. Google, most recently, the stat I saw, they get 50,000 resumes every single week, which is insane. And so if you want to get in the door with some of these companies, the online application is essentially like putting all of your money on, you know, not just black or red, but like a specific number and a specific color in roulette and just doing it all in one go. The chances are just astronomically against you. So I started talking to some of these people who had achieved those criteria. I went out and found the people who were working in roles I was interested in, who met that criteria. I looked at their salaries on Glassdoor to make sure they match up. I was looking for people who were in those cities I talked about. And I went and I talked to them and I was just like, how do you do it? And that really, really opened some doors for me, because those people basically had two things in common. All of them had gotten a referral into the job that they wanted, which is what you mentioned before I launched into this diatribe. But that was one commonality. And then the second was that they found a creative way to showcase their value. And so both of those things were really interesting to me, because it makes sense. People want to hire other folks that they like, they know, that they trust, that they have a relationship with. And if you look at the data out there, referrals make up anywhere, it depends on the source you look at, but it makes up anywhere from 40% to 80% of all hires. And those hires tend to be viewed better by companies. They stay longer, they tend to produce better results, et cetera, which is why companies are willing to pay these referral bonuses to their employees and stuff like that to bring in new people. So getting a referral was definitely key. And then showcasing your value was also key, especially for somebody like myself who's coming from a non-traditional background. I was trying to transition from that biology major in a job in healthcare to tech. And so a lot of people say, you know, I could do this job if somebody would just give me a chance. But the problem is when you're transitioning industries, you're making a career pivot, the hiring process is set up to focus on your path. So your resume is essentially, you know, it's a summary of what you've done in the past. And all the questions in the interviews and on the applications, they're all focused to what you've done in the past. But the past isn't always a good indicator of future success, especially when you're coming from a non-traditional background. Because if you only focus on the past and it's not, you know, what they expected on paper, you're going to spend the whole time defending it. And that was a huge disadvantage for you, because you can't then talk about what makes you great and what you bring to the table. So something that I created, I kind of coined this term value validation project, but it's essentially a deliverable that takes into account a lot of the stuff that we've talked about so far. It shows that you've done your research on the company. It shows that you've talked to people on the team and you understand their needs, those challenges, the projects they're working on, the goals, all that good stuff we talked about. And then it basically plugs your value into those specific things. And so this is more of an art than a science. It could be a PowerPoint deck with feedback on an initiative they're launching. You could go out and do a survey of their customers and pull some data from that, see what the results look like. If you're a developer, maybe you go build an app or a piece of code or something that helps them solve a problem or aligns with their business. There's really a whole bunch of different ways to do this. And it's all about getting good at understanding what the company needs and aligning your value. But by putting something together like that, it shifts the conversation away from what you've done in the past. And it basically says, hey, I can do this and here's proof. Here's something you can hold in your hand that you can see and that you can analyze that says, I can do this job. And so with those two things in mind, I basically set out to build as many relationships as I could, honestly, not even just with people at Google or Microsoft, but that was a skill I needed to build from scratch because I was super introverted. I was terrified of sending emails to people, to strangers. So I kind of had to build that muscle and I just started sending 3 to 5 emails every day and just talking to as many people as I could and asking them those questions we spoke about before. And then I also tried to think of and brainstorm ways that I could create those value validation projects. And so eventually that led to a job at a startup in New York, and then another job at a startup in New York. And then after that, I ended up interviewing with and getting offers from Google and Twitter and Microsoft. And then I ended up taking the job at Microsoft. But that was solely due to those value validation projects. And also, and I think something that you like to talk about, it was due to a couple of side hustles that I had going on at the time would help me build some more experience in the space.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Such a good point about resumes in the past and then the value validation project. It's like, this is what I can do right now. And, you know, maybe it could be looked as like free work or not, but it's just showcasing what you can do and how you think, how you solve problems and what you'd like to do immediately.
Totally. And I'm actually really glad you mentioned the free work piece because that's something that people say a lot to me. And I think about it like this. So if you're unhappy with the current situation that you're in and what you're doing isn't working, especially if it's applying online or whatever, and you feel like you don't have any control and it's not working, you have to do something different. One. On top of that, you stand so much to gain. So on average, I think people who switch jobs these days can make on average up to about a 20% raise. Sometimes it's way more than that. For me personally, my salary was doubled when I got to Microsoft. I just helped somebody get a job at Amazon with about a 60% raise as well. So I mean, this stuff varies, but the point is the upside is massive in terms of happiness, satisfaction, salary, other forms of compensation. And so when that's what you have to gain, the value validation project, is it more work? Definitely. Is it something that you may consider to be like a consultative approach or something that you might freelance for? Absolutely. But if it helps you win the job and you have all those things to gain, in my mind, it's not necessarily free. It's more you selling yourself and going above and beyond to show that you're the right person so that you put yourself in the best position to capture that $50,000 raise or 20% raise and that job that's going to make you happy because there's better work-life balance or work that you care about or a shorter commute or whatever it is. So you can definitely view it as free work and I understand why people do, but I think that that's the wrong way to view it, especially when you consider one, where you're at right now and the fact that if you want to make a job switch, something is definitely not going right. And then if you think about what's possible, you know, if you could get a job at any company theoretically in any industry, making what you want, what you feel like you deserve, and then also doing the work that gets you excited, that value validation project, that few extra hours that you put in to do it, that quote unquote free work, there's a lot of reward and the risk is minimal. You waste a few hours of your time, maybe they steal your project. And if that happens, that's a good litmus test. You know, if they're stealing the free work from their candidates, imagine what they do to the people that they pay. That's not a team that I would want to work on. So I'm glad that you brought that up, but I think it's important to address it.
Totally. Yeah. That's such a good point too about a litmus test. And I can imagine like if you actually do that project, then it gives you more confidence. It also showcases that you are personally, you know, more confident and excited about that job as opposed to just applying online and saying, yeah, I really like this. But just actually going through that a couple extra hours is probably, you know, very helpful to yourself on a standalone basis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then, so you mentioned startups, you mentioned, you know, big tech companies, you know, kind of how are you thinking about, you know, the side hustles, freelancing? You probably know the stats a little bit more than I do, but just how are you kind of thinking about the current landscape?
So I think that in terms of freelancing and side hustles, I'm a big believer that everybody should have a side hustle of some kind. And it doesn't have to necessarily be like an online business or any of that, or specifically freelancing. It could be anything that you're excited about. It. Maybe you're building an app because it's something that you need in your life and you'd benefit from it. And maybe you're planning to monetize it down the road, maybe you're not, but that's totally a side hustle as well. But starting something on the side, having a project on the side is so valuable for a number of reasons. Right off the bat, if you have an itch that you need to scratch that you're not getting from your job, maybe it's a certain skill that you want to build or try out, or maybe it's just something that you're passionate about that you're not getting enough of at your current job, a side hustle is a great way to scratch that itch. But then on top of it, it really helps flesh out your skill set, because our jobs at these companies, in a lot of cases, you don't have a ton of control over what you're working on. You can definitely pitch ideas, and you know, you can get buy-in for those, et cetera. But a lot of the times you have to snap to the business plan and, you know, what management wants and all that good stuff. And if you get out there and you start your own thing, you can really flesh out your skill set because you can focus on whatever you want. So even for me, I work in digital advertising now, but I don't get to do a lot of other forms of digital marketing. So I focus specifically on like pay-per-click ads in my office job. But then at my side hustle, I get to do a lot of content marketing, and I get to do all this different stuff, social media. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. Like you said, I post a lot of content there. And so I get to try out all this different stuff that I don't get from my job. And it's really exciting because I get to be an expert in pay-per-click ads and online marketing through paid ads at my full-time job. But then I also get to build my skill set with content and stuff in social media outside of that. And so now all of a sudden I'm a much more well-rounded person, skill-wise and professionally, than I would be if I just had my full-time job. So that opens up a lot of doors. And then on top of that, you have a security blanket. So if you do end up building some monetization around whatever your side hustle is or your project, you can add some security to your life. So I think, I don't know if you're familiar with Pat Flynn, but he does the Smart Passive Income podcast. And his story is really cool because he worked for an architecture firm, and there's this test that you have to pass. And he was studying for it and busting his butt. And he created all these super robust study guides, and he ended up passing with flying colors. And a lot of his colleagues were saying, Pat, how'd you do that? Can I borrow your study guides? All this stuff. And so he was like, maybe I'll start a side business out of this. So he started posting some of the guides online and writing blog posts. And then he created a prep book, and he started selling it for like, I don't know, like $20 or something. And then he ended up getting laid off from his firm in 2008. And he already had this side hustle growing. He hadn't really thought a ton about monetizing it. So we kind of ramped it up to the next level. And now he makes millions of dollars a month, I think. And obviously, you know, that's probably more the exception than the rule. But my point is, even if you're just bringing in like $500, $1,000 on the side, if you end up getting laid off or the economy turns or whatever happens, you know that you at least have a little bit of a security blanket on top of your full-time job, which is great. And if times are good and the economy is great, you know, maybe that money goes towards the trip to Cabo or the trip to Thailand or whatever it is, or the down payment on a house, which is also great. But it gives you a little bit more freedom and flexibility. And then finally, for me, the last piece and maybe the most valuable piece is just connecting with people that you would never have a chance to talk to or have crossed paths with before. So just getting out there and publishing blog posts and getting active on LinkedIn. For me, I've met so many incredible people who are much more like-minded than some of the folks that I had been interacting with in my daily life before, and that it's really gratifying. And then entrepreneurship can be a lonely journey. So all of a sudden you have people to bounce ideas off of. And as you get better and better at building relationships, the possibilities are kind of endless. So for me, you know, I a couple of years ago when I started this thing, I emailed back and forth with Arianna Huffington and ended up getting a feature in Huffington Post and became a contributor for Thrive, her new company. Some of the stuff that I did helped me get a quick sit down with Satya Nadella, Microsoft CEO. And then on top of that, Neil Patel, I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he's big on the marketing side and somebody that I've followed for a while and looked up to. And I just got a feature as a success story on his blog just through talking to him and building some of these relationships. So once you, I would have never been able to do that if I didn't start my side hustle. And once you have this thing that is yours and you're kind of, you have the freedom to do whatever you want and build the relationships you want, you're going to be able to meet these amazing people that you probably wouldn't have been able to speak to or cross paths with before that really end up enriching your life.
Congrats. That's amazing, Austin.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, I forget the stat that you mentioned in the beginning, but 30,000 or 40,000 people that have come through cultivatorculture.com. That's incredible. And I think your LinkedIn headline alone is probably one of my favorite ones I've ever seen. Help people land amazing jobs without applying online. Hats off, man. That's just great stuff.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I think the headline is really, there's a lot of folks out there who are job search experts and who are, you know, resume writers and all this stuff. But really what frustrated me the most was the fact that I felt like applying online gave me zero control and it felt like playing roulette. So I know that that's a frustration for people. And I think anytime you can hone in on the frustrations of other people that you're solving, I think that's a winner. So that's the goal with the headline. I'm glad it's resonating with you. I hope it's resonating with other people. But it also took a couple iterations to get there. So definitely it's all about testing and experimenting and seeing what works.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, Austin. Is there anything else before you tell us where people can follow up and learn more about you?
Yeah, for sure. So I'll give two things based off of where people are at. So first, if you are looking to make a career change, the best thing that you can do is just find people who are working in the role that you want. They have the job title. They're working at companies that you're interested in. And just start sending, find them on LinkedIn. You can use a tool like hunter.io to find their email. And just start emailing like 3 to 5 people every day and get on the phone with them, have conversations with them, make the outreach about them. Don't tell them you're looking for a job necessarily, but say, hey, your experience really stood out to me. I want to learn more about that. Your journey is really cool. I want to learn more about that. Make it about them. Get on the phone with as many people as you can basically handle. And those relationships are going to turn into opportunities. They're going to turn into referrals. They're going to turn into job offers. But the biggest thing that you can control is the amount of emails you send. Taking the leap and reaching out to a stranger, somebody who may be able to help you, and just being vulnerable. So I'd say that that's the best thing for people to do. And the thing that most people struggle with is taking that action if you're looking for a new job. If you're looking to start a side hustle, or if you're comfortable with your job, I think everybody, again, should have a side hustle. And so if you're struggling with, the best advice I have is just get started. And I think the biggest thing that people struggle with is the idea. But I would say that, you know, when I was younger and I always wanted to be an entrepreneur, but, you know, I dreamed of like starting the next Facebook or whatever, or I'd have an idea and I'd be like, oh man, somebody already did it. And I honestly throw those ideas out the window, because there's so many six-figure businesses out there run by one person, two people, three people that have like, they're crazy. They're like, you know, yoga for dogs. I bet you if you looked it up, there'd be a six-figure business for that somewhere. Like, there are all these crazy ideas that people have that they turn into businesses. And it's really just about what you're good at. So first, I would say, go ask friends, go ask family, go ask coworkers what they would come to you for advice on, or what they think that you're, maybe you could say an expert, or what they think you're really knowledgeable on. And go look through that list. And that's your starting point. And then if somebody's already done it, that's not a reason to shy away. Competition is good, because if other people are out there with their own businesses and they were able to make money and they're running it full time, that means that there's a market. And that, you know, there's 7 or 8 billion people on the planet. There's definitely enough to go around for everyone. Just because somebody else is already doing it doesn't mean that you are like not allowed to enter the space, or you're totally going to fail and you can't have, you know, any of their clients or any of that. You know, everybody brings a different perspective to the table. And if you focus on what you're good at, the passion will come, because you'll get excited that more people are recognizing that. You'll also be able to offer a lot of value because you already know some of the questions that people ask. You know what your responses are. And then it's just getting started, finding a way to publish that information, whether it's a podcast, whether it's a blog post, whether it's on social media, through YouTube videos, just finding a way to create that content and getting it out there and pushing it out there to the world. That is the absolute best thing that you can do. Because even if you're moving slowly, you're moving faster than everybody else who's sitting on the couch, you know, doing nothing, watching Netflix at the end of the day. So those would be my two biggest pieces of advice, depending on where people are at, and also based off of the struggles or problems that I hear most frequently from people in those situations.
Yeah, amazing. Okay. And then what's the best way? We talked about LinkedIn, cultivatedculture.com. What are some other ways that people can follow up and support you, Austin?
Yeah, those are the two best ways. So I always say people are welcome to email me. I can't be the person who tells you to go reach out to strangers and then doesn't reply if you reach out to me. So
you replied to mine.
Exactly. So my email is austin@cultivatedculture.com, or you can send me a LinkedIn message, but that inbox tends to fill up pretty fast. And then we can definitely connect on LinkedIn. Just shoot me a personalized note and mention the podcast, and we can definitely connect. Feel free to follow along there too. And then cultivatedculture.com, the blog there has a bunch of the resources that we've talked about today. It has strategies, tactics, templates, scripts you can copy and paste, tools, all that good stuff. It's all free. So definitely check it out if finding a job or starting a side hustle is something you're interested in.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Austin. Really appreciate your time.
Of course, David. Thank you so much for having me, man. It was a pleasure.
Pleasure is all mine.
Thanks again for tuning in to another exciting episode of Portfolio Career Podcast. As a reminder, this episode with timestamp notes to follow along is also available on my website, portfoliocareerpodcast.com. There, you can also record and ask a question related to all things related portfolio career to potentially be included in a future episode. Really excited for you to use these insights to build and grow your portfolio career. And as always, let me know what you think.